So over the days that followed, they hunted the old lion with ethical tactics. They had to provide fresh baits for him and the lionesses, and Ricardo shot the buffalo Sean pointed out to him. Another barren cow, and then 2 days later a decrepit bull with horns worn down to stumps and his ribs showing through his bald, mud-caked hide. Each day Sean moved the bait or repositioned the thatched hide, trying to find a location which the black-maned male would feel sufficiently confident to approach in broad daylight. Evening after evening they sat in the hide, until an hour after darkness had fallen, and then drove back to camp dejected and discouraged. When they visited the bait again the following morning, they found that the lion had fed, leaving his mane hairs and his huge pad marks to tantalize them, and had departed again before dawn. Cursing the beast bitterly, Sean changed tactics. He lowered the remains of the rotten bait on its chain so that the lionesses and cubs could reach it readily. By this stage it was mostly dried skin and gnawed bone. 500 meters up the river he hung a fresh carcass, at a height that only the big lion could reach, in a tree that stood alone in a glade of shoulder-high, dry winter grass. He hoped that without the harassment of the females and cubs, the lion might come earlier to the bait. To make him feel even more secure, he placed the hide across the dry river bed in the fork of a teak tree. It was a McCann platform, 15 feet above ground level. From the McCann, they had a view across the white sand of the dry riverbed. Sean did not clear all the grass around the bait tree. He wanted the lion to feel protected by good cover. He merely opened a keyhole in the grass, barely as wide as the body of the lion, through which they could see the carcass. "If he comes, you'll have to wait until he rears up to feed, Capo," he explained, as they went into the McCann an hour after noon, to wait out the long, drowsy, hot afternoon. Sean allowed Claudia to bring a paperback copy of Karen Blixen's Out of Africa to read. "Just as long as you don't rustle the pages," he warned her. The lionesses and their cubs came early. They were so conditioned to feeding from a bait by now that they showed not the least trepidation at approaching. Firstly, they came to the new bait in the grassy glade and inspected it wistfully. Both lionesses made attempts to feed from it, but it was just out of their reach. For the last few days, the eyes of the young lioness, Growly Gertie, had been irritated and infected by the river sand that Sean had fired into them. Tears ran down her cheeks, and her eyelids were swollen and inflamed. But now they were healing and clearing. The swelling was abating, and there were only smears of yellow mucus in the corners of her eyes. After a while, they gave up trying to reach the carcass and led their cubs down the riverbank to the old stinking bait. From the McCann they could hear the pride growling and ripping at the bait 500 meters downstream. But as the afternoon passed, so the sounds of feeding dwindled into silence as the lionesses satiated themselves and went to lie up in the shade. Half an hour before sunset, the small hot breeze that had been blowing all afternoon dropped abruptly, and that peculiar hush of an African evening descended on the veld. The sparse winter growth of leaves on the trees was still, not a blade of yellow grass stirred in the glade across the river bed, and the fluffy papyrus reeds below the bank ceased their perpetual nodding and bowing, and stood as though listening intently. It was so quiet that Claudia looked up from her book, and then closed it softly and sat listening to the absolute silence. Then suddenly, a bush buck barked on the far bank, an alarm call so clear and loud in the hush that Claudia jumped involuntarily. Immediately she felt Sean's light, firm touch on her hip, a warning, and she heard her father's breathing, quick and deep, as though he had just finished a hard rally on the court. The silence had an ominous weight to it now, as though the world held its breath. Then she heard her father exhale softly, and she glanced sideways at him. His expression was rapt as that of a communicant kneeling for the sacrament. God, he was a handsome man, she thought. Except for the silver wings at his temples, he looked so much younger than his years, so tanned and lean and fit. As yet, there was no external sign of the treachery of his own body that was destroying itself from within. His excitement was infectious, and she felt her own blood course more swiftly, driven by the quickening of her pulse, and she turned her head slowly to follow the direction of her father's gaze. He was looking off to the right, out across the river to where the trees of the forest met the tall, pale grass at the edge of the glade. The only living creature out there was a grey, parrot-like bird, perched on the top of a branch of a bush willow. Sean had told her it was a grey lury, the notorious go-away bird that plagued the hunter with its raucous warning cry. The bird squawked now, "Gway, gway!" But as it fluttered on the high branch, it was twisting its neck, craning to peer down into the long grass below the bush willow. "Here he comes. The bird can see him," Sean whispered, only inches behind her ear, and Claudia strained her eyes, looking for she knew not what. "Watch the grass," Sean guided her, and she saw the movement. The tips of the grass trembled and pushed, a stealthy, furtive movement that passed slowly down the glade towards the river bank, and then the grass behind it was still again. It was like the movement of a large trout in a still pool, the creature unseen, just the surface bulging and stirring to mark its passing. All movement ceased for long minutes at a time. "He's listening and checking the scent," Sean explained. She never expected him to show emotion such as excitement, but his whisper was tight and scratchy. The movement of the grass tips began again, coming on towards the bait tree, and suddenly her father gave a small, breathy gasp, and at the same moment Sean warned her again. Perhaps he'd meant to touch her hip once more, but his fingers closed on her upper thigh instead. His touch was a shock, made more intense by her first sight of the beast. The lion passed through a gap in the grass, which the lionesses had trampled, and she glimpsed the top of his head, the dense bush of his mane, dark and curling, swaying and rippling to his low imperial stride, and for an instant she caught the flash of yellow eyes below the mane. She had never seen any creature so menacing, and yet so majestic. It was the briefest glimpse before the grass covered him again, but it left her shaken and breathless, and Sean's hand was still on her thigh. Suddenly she realized that she was sexually aroused. The tension in her lower belly, the hardening thrust of her nipples against the cotton shirt, and the warm flooding of her loins surprised her. She felt an almost irresistible urge to let her thighs relax and fall open under Sean's fingers, even though the folly of it would be monumental. If she had been asked to describe a human being who most offended and angered her, the description would have fitted him perfectly. She knew that if she showed the slightest vulnerability, he would exploit it ruthlessly. "And I don't even like him," she told herself desperately. Yet her legs were trembling. He must feel it, and she couldn't move. Then he took his hand off her leg, but the way he did it was offensive. He didn't simply lift it away, he turned it into a caress, drawing his fingers lingeringly over her thigh and hip, a disconcerting sensation for which she was unprepared. She felt her cheeks and her throat turn hot with resentment, but she stared out across the riverbed to that stealthy movement that stopped at last below the bait tree. The silence drew out while Claudia tried to bring her emotions under control. "It wasn't him," she told herself. "I wasn't reacting to him. He has nothing for me. It was the tension and excitement of the moment, nothing to do with him. He's not the least bit attractive to me. I like sensitivity and subtlety, and he is obvious and overpowering and brutal." Across the river, there was an abrupt disturbance in the grass and the sound of a heavy body flopping to earth. Behind her, she felt Sean shake with soft and silent laughter, and for an incredulous moment she thought he was laughing at her. Then he whispered, "He's lain down. Can you believe it? He's taking a rest. Under the bait. That cocky son of a bitch." Sean was thinking about the girl as much as about the lion. The unconcealed antipathy she bore him, he returned in full measure, which made it more amusing to tease and plague her. Of course, the lion hide was always a good place to catch a woman off balance. He had begun many a memorable affair here. When they were in the hide, they were psychologically under his control, like children in a classroom. He was the master, and they were conditioned to obey his will, and the tension and nervous excitement made him receptive and compliant. The promise of danger and bloodshed heightened awareness, physical and sexual. It had been fun to find out that this bumptious, spoilt, self-righteous American bitch was no different from any of the others. She was probably hating herself and him at this moment for that momentary lapse. He smiled thinly as he sat up close behind her. He had judged it with a fine instinct of the gifted philanderer, for it was, of course, a gift. He'd read with attention Casanova's memoirs, and there the old rogue had described it precisely. When she is receptive, every woman gives out subtle little signs. Breathing, flush of skin, change of poise, tiny body movements, even odour, that very few men can even recognise, let alone interpret. It was a gift that only the great lovers possessed. Knowing when to act and how far to push each stage, that was the trick, he told himself. From where he sat, he could see her right cheek and the long, dark lashes of the eye above, even though she was deliberately keeping her head turned away from him now. She had bound her jet-black hair into a thick braid that hung down between her shoulder blades. So her neck was exposed, an elegant column that supported the small, neat head. Her neck and cheek were still flushed with angry arousal beneath the skin that was already darkened by the African sun, to the tone where she could have modelled for an expensive sun cream in one of the glossy women's magazines. As he studied her, the flush abated, and she regained her composure. But under her thin cotton T-shirt, the nipple, on the one pert, almost girlish breast that he could see, was in silhouette. It was still standing out, the size and colour of a ripe mulberry, a dark wine colour through the thin material. Then it began to shrink and subside. The phenomenon intrigued him, and he laughed again soundlessly. "You've given yourself a blinding hard-on," he chuckled, "and you can't even stand the little witch." He switched his attention from her back to the unseen cat in the grass across the river. It was almost fully dark before they saw the lion again. There was just a fading memory of the sunset on the western horizon, but Sean had positioned the bait and blind so that it backlit the scene for them. They heard the grass rustle and stir as the lion stood up, and they leaned forward eagerly. Ricardo lifted the buttstock of the rifle to his shoulder and peered into the long tube of the telescopic sight. Abruptly, the lion reared out of the grass, a great, dark, shapeless mass, just visible against the pale sky, and they heard the creak of the chain that held the bait as he swung upon it with all his weight, tearing at the carcass as he began to feed. "Can you see your sights?" Sean asked Ricardo. The lion was making so much noise that he raised his voice to an almost conversational pitch, but Ricardo did not reply. He was moving the long barrel of the rifle in slow circles, trying desperately to pick up the crosshairs of the sight against the last fading glimmer of the sunset. "No," he admitted defeat at last. "It's too dark." Claudia felt a lift of relief that she wouldn't have to witness the slaughter. But Sean said quietly, "All right, we'll just have to sit it out and try and get a crack at him in the dawn."
"All night?"
Despite his injunctions to silence, Claudia was so startled by the prospect of spending the night in the hide that she protested plaintively. "You signed on to be tough, didn't you?" Sean smiled at her alarm.
But won't Job bring the truck?"
She sounded desperate. "Not unless he hears a shot." And she subsided miserably in her chair. The night was interminable and cold, and the mosquitoes came from the stagnant green pool in the riverbed and whined around their heads, ignoring the repellent that Claudia smeared on her exposed skin.